Okay, hi. I'm Wojciech Wojciechowicz from the Machine Learning Group at Technical University in Berlin, and I will present you our recent work about stationary common patterns. This is joint work with Kaum and Vidore and Motoaki Kawanabe. So here is an overview. I will start with an introduction, then tell you something about the common spatial patterns method and our stationary common spatial patterns method. Then I will show some results and conclude the talk with a summary. So our target application is brain-computer interfacing. And the brain-computer interface system aims to translate the intent of a subject, for example, measured from brain activity, here in this case by an EEG, into a control command for a computer application. So in this case, you are measuring EEG and you want to control this game, this pinball game. But you can also think of other applications like controlling a wheelchair or neuroprosthesis. So a very popular paradigm for BCI is motor imagery. In motor imagery, the subject imagines some motions with the right hand or with the left hand or with the feet. And these different motions lead to different patterns in the EEG. And if your system is able to extract and classify these different patterns, then you can convert it to a computer command and control an application like this. So there are still some challenges. So for example, the EEG signal is usually high dimensional. It has a low spatial resolution. That means you have volume conduction effects and it is noisy and non-stationary. By non-stationary, I mean that signal properties change over time. So what usually people do in BCI, they apply some methods, some spatial filtering methods, for example, CSP, in order to reduce the dimensionality. So the goal is to combine electrodes and to project the signal to a subspace and increase the spatial resolution and hopefully the signal-to-noise ratio and simplify the learning problem. But the problem of CSP is that it's prone to overfitting. It can be negatively affected by artifacts, and it doesn't tackle the non-stationarity issue. That means if your computer features applying CSP, then the features may still change quite a bit. And usually your classifier assumes a stable distribution. So in machine learning, you usually assume that the training data and the test data comes from the same distribution. And if your distribution change too much, then it doesn't work. So your classifier will not work optimal. So therefore, we extend the CSP method and extract more stationary features. So non-stationarities are changes of the signal properties over time, and they may have very different sources and timescales. For example, you may have changes in the electrode impedance when the electrode gets loose or the gel between the scalp and the electrode dries out. You may also have muscular activity and eye movements. They may lead to artifacts in the data. And usually you also have changes in task involvement when subjects get tired, or differences between sessions. So like no feedback condition in the calibration session, whereas in the feedback session you provide feedback. So basically all those non-stationarities are bad for you because they negatively affect your classifier. And so there are two ways to deal with this. One way is to extract better features, to make your features more robust and more invariant to these changes. So this is the way we propose in our paper, or we target in our paper. The other way is to do adaptation. So you can adapt the classifier to deal with these changes. Okay, so the common spatial patterns method. It's a method very popular in brain-computer interfacing, and it maximizes the variance from one class while minimizing the variance of the other class. So here you have like two conditions. You imagine, you have the imagination of the movement with the right hand and the left hand. And you see that these two guys down here, they maximize the variance of the signal. So this is a projected signal. They maximize it in the right hand condition, but minimize it in the left hand condition. And the two guys above, they do exactly the opposite. So they maximize the variance in the left condition, but minimize it in the right condition. So why do you want to do so? Like in BCI, your goal is to discriminate between mental states. And you know that the variance of a bandpass filtered signal is equal to band power in this frequency band. So and in you can discriminate mental states by looking at the power in specific frequency bands. So when you do so, you can easily detect changes between the conditions because you're looking at the band power. And finally, you're looking at the band power in specific frequency bands. And CSP can be solved as a generalized eigenvalue problem because like you can formulate the algorithm here, so you want to maximize the projected variance of one condition while minimizing the variance of the common condition. Now, equally, you could also write here you want to minimize the variance of the other condition of sigma minus. So you can solve this very easily in MATLAB, for example. But our idea is we do not only want the projection which has these properties, but we also want that the projection provides stationary features. So we want to penalize non-stationary projection directions. So we introduce a penalty P of W to the denominator of the relay coefficient here. So we add this P of W here. And then the final goal is to maximize the projected variance in one condition while minimizing the variance in the other condition and minimizing this P penalty term. So the penalty term measures somehow non-stationarities. So we want to measure the deviation between the average case. So this is the sigma C is the average matrix of all tries from condition C, from the one condition. And sigma kc is the covariance matrix from the kth chunk. A chunk may consist of one trial or more than one trials from the same class. So you want to kind of to minimize the deviation from each trial to the average case. So this is like a penalty term because you want to be stationary. And for each class separately. So you want to do it for each class separately. The problem is if you add this quantity to the denominator, then you won't get this form anymore because you cannot take out these W's outside the sum because of this absolute value function here. So you won't be able to solve it as a generalized eigenvalue problem anymore. So what do we do about this? We add a quantity which is related. So we take this W vector outside the sum, but introduce an operator F to make this difference matrix to be positive definite, because we are only interested in, like, in the variation of both sides. We treat it in a similar way. So we do not care if. Like, for example, here we do not care if this guy is bigger or this guy is bigger. We're only interested in the difference after projection. But here we do kind of the same, but we do this before projecting. So we do not do this after projecting because we take this W outside the sum. And we can also show that this quantity gives an upper bound of the other quantity which we wanted to minimize. So it makes sense to use it. So we put this guy in the Rayleigh coefficient of our objective function. So our data set is we compared CSP and SCSP on the data set of 80 subjects performing motion imagery. They were new to BCI, so they did it for the first time. We selected for each user the best binary task combination and the best parameters on the calibration data. And we did some testing, test session with feedback with 300 trials. We recorded the EEG from 68 preselected electrodes and used log variance features and an LDA classifier and error rates to measure performance. We used a fixed number of filters per class and selected the trade-off parameter with cross-validation. And we also tried different chunk sizes and selected the best one also via cross-validation on the calibration data. So here are some performance results. So you see the scatter plots when using 3 CSP directions per class or using 1 CSP direction per class. On the x-axis, you see the error rate of CSP, and on the y-axis, you see the error rates of our approach. And you can see that especially for subjects which fail when using CSP, like these guys, they become really better with our method, and it's the same as can be seen here. And we computed test statistic, and the changes are significant. So our method works better, especially for the subjects which have error rates larger than 30%. So we can improve in these cases which fail when using CSP, which is somehow clear, because if CSP works well, then your patterns are probably really, really good, and the signal-to-noise ratio is good, so you do not have a lot of room to improve it. But so the question is, why does SCSP perform better? So basically, we know that CSP may fail to extract the current patterns when affected by artifacts. And as you saw, stationary CSP is more robust to these artifacts because it treats artifacts as non-stationary, and it reduces this non-stationarity in the features. And CSP is also known to overfit, and SCSP penalizes filters with large norms and reduces changes in the features. So for example, here you see the results, subject performing left and right motion imagery. You see that both methods are able to extract the correct left-hand pattern. So there is activity on the right hemisphere. This means that it's a pattern for the left-hand motion imagery. But for the right hand, the CSP method fails because probably in this electrode there is an artifact, or this electrode gives a noisy signal or bad signal. It's kind of non-stationary. But SCSP is still a bit affected by this artifacts in this electrode, but it's able to extract the more or less correct pattern of the right hand movement. And you also see here, when you look at the distribution between training features and test features, training features are the triangles and test features are the circles. So you see that the distribution in the training phase of CSP is usually like here, but it changes a lot when you go to the test distribution, when you look at the test features. So the distribution is completely different in the test case. But when we use SCSP, we extract more stable features, more stationary features. So the distribution between training and test phase is more or less the same. So you can classify, in this case, you can classify a lot better. So here's the decision boundary, and you see that in the test case, you really fail to classify correctly over here. Okay, so in summary, we extended the popular CSP method to extract stationary features. SCSP significantly increases classification accuracy, especially for subjects who perform badly with CSP. And unlike other methods, like invariant CSP, we are completely data-driven. we do not require additional recordings or models of the expected changes. And we also showed, but it was not presented in this paper, that a combination of stationary features and unsupervised adaptation can further improve classification performance. So I want to thank you for your attention and be happy to answer questions.
Can you explain more details about the function f in penalty time?
You mean, so the function.
Yeah, this one. Yeah.
So this function f is a simple. It's kind of a heuristic because it makes your matrix, this difference matrix, it makes it positive definite. So it means it flips the sign of all negative eigenvalues, and why you want to do so? Because you want a sum over k of possible value, a positive value. So you want to, for example, here you sum over k of possible positive deviations, and you kind of want to do the same here. So you make this the difference matrix positive definite, and we can show that this is an upper bound on the other quantity.
So here you use the operation that flips the sign on all negative eigenvalues as you explained in this slide.
So we compute this difference matrix, then we do an eigen decomposition, uh-huh. And then flips the sign of all negative eigenvalues.
Okay, so you keep the positive ones positive.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the directions, as the eigenvectors, like the directions are kind of flipped, or like when you have an eigenvector with a negative eigenvalue, then you flip it simply, but you do not like change it a lot, but you only flip it because you are only interested in positive contributions.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Okay, how do you divide your training data into the chunks? You evenly, or you have some protocol you can use clustering to find some similarities and so on?
No, you can simply use the chunk size of one. So that means that you use each trial, like each trial is then a chunk. You can do, for example, this. You can do this trial-wise, or you can put trials from the same class which are subsequent together in one chunk. So we do not apply any clustering. We only like put them together, or we do it for each trial separately.
My question is about your test data. Have you evaluated your method on the test data in different day?
No, this was only one test session.
Okay.
The question about the clustering of the chunk sizes. So if you would use a chunk size which is larger than one, wouldn't you get like average out part of your noise stationarities?
So this was the idea, to use chunk sizes, because if you use chunk size of one, then you like detect changes on a small time scale. If you take larger chunk sizes, then your time scale will also be bigger because you average out changes which only occur, for example, in one trial. So we tried different chunk sizes and like selected the best one using cross-validation.
Questions? Thank you for speaking again.